So we have the first question posed in English.
The CEO recently talked about adding 100,000 tons of copper via mergers and acquisitions. Are you looking to acquire operating assets or buy into early stage opportunities with future growth optionality?
So ladies and gentlemen, at this point of time, we are in the midst of a few M&A processes. It's premature for us to talk about the details, but we are participating in several projects where each one of them would generate value in terms of production. Some of them are highly operational in nature. Some of them are earlier stage projects. And so in the upcoming quarters, we would like to show at least one project of an M&A nature. We're close to doing that. We're also looking for other projects in terms of our function of purpose. So we're not talking about building a major KGHM, but we want to build a KGHM that will generate value through every subsequent transaction. So the overarching objective is to do transactions that will be well priced for them to generate positive cash flow for the overall corporate group and for the shareholders at the end of the day. So the transactions we're negotiating right now, if they're going to deliver that, this will have an impact on our volume and the cash flow. And in some cases, as the CEO mentioned, are closer to the production sphere. Some of them are more earlier stage projects, but we can say that as a corporate group, we have the know-how and we in terms of these projects. And so even early stage opportunities, we know how to convert into effective production projects, having in mind the group, the competences, the machinery we have, and the people who are very capable of implementing these projects and turning them into production focused projects. So now we have the second question from Paweł Puchalski. Why hasn't the company presented its dividend policy? So Paweł, the company has maintained its dividend policy, so we haven't revised that. We've maintained the dividend policy. It says up to 30% of the unit profit, the standalone profit, would be distributed as in the form of dividend. I can reiterate what the CEO said. This is in our models, and this is what our approach is. Our capital allocation process anticipates that dividends would be paid out to the shareholders. This is a very important element in terms of our modeling and making decisions in terms of how we manage financial liquidity. There is also a question about dividends. So we have the commentary from the president. Then we also have a question about the energy sector, an increase of 50%. To what extent will this be renewable energy sources and what other sources will be utilized? So what was shown today during today's presentation, we should talk about the installed capacity we're talking about at peak. And so at the peak, this can represent some 50% of our demand. Nevertheless, when we calculate into volumes, this will be percentages of our total consumption, as you've seen in recent weeks. So first financing from the National Recovery Plan from the Development Bank, so 100 megawatts, which is being of solar power being co-financed by EU sources. We're going to show another transaction with NFOESH, so the National Environmental Protection Fund. So basically in total capacity, installed capacity of solar powers, and what we have right now would be in excess of 200 megawatts of capacity. So another argument are the PPAs. As you've seen, last year we entered into three contracts for a total volume of 160,000 megawatt hours. Right now we're negotiating the purchase and the extension of our PPAs, and this is a wind profile, and so this corresponds well. It's well aligned to what our needs are, and from this point of view, this is a broader concept of basically shaping the energy and the energy we use through our company. And we have great ambitions and Trading of energy is something that we're able to build from the ground up, and we want to utilize this in a cost-effective manner. And at the same time, we want to be able to produce that. So this is something that we will continue to develop, optimize, because we see there's an extensive potential to extract additional cost elements in this area. Then we have another question in English. I'll read it in the original language. So, ladies and gentlemen, once again, as the entire sector operates, we have two legs. We have the assets we hold, and we continue to optimize and develop them. And here, the best confirmation is the most recent transaction or the directional consent to extend production in Sierra Gorda by 20% by beginning the project to set up a fourth line. And so, for handling winnings, and that's part of our strategy, where in a short period of time, we're able to add incremental volume and additional cash flow. And we're also looking at M&A opportunities globally. What can I say? What is our sweet spot? Where is that project, which is a dream project for us? This is roughly 50,000 of metal of production per annum with a 10-year period. And so we're thinking about countries neighboring where we countries where we feel well. And so our strategic and our purpose is to manage geopolitical risks. So we're thinking about Argentina. We're also engaged in some talks there, but the regions where we are present at now, like Chile, these are very friendly jurisdictions, and we've been operating there for quite a while, and we're capable of managing those local risks, and we're able having a dedicated team to act there efficiently. So we have two questions about polyhalite. So this is a product about doing some reconnaissance and building infrastructure in terms of mines there. So we have a question from Ioannis Mazolis.
In that pursuit for growth, is there a maximum leverage threshold? And would you consider building a war chest ahead of NMA cycle?
Thank you very much for this question. So, responding to your question, once again, we're looking at multi-minerals. So, we haven't made the decision or we haven't received the mining concession yet. And there are certain projects to manage, risk to manage in this project, but we're thinking about additional building an additional leg. As you mentioned, this would diversify our mineral profile on one hand. At the same time, we feel good, very good in terms of JV, joint venture projects. So we could imagine that a partner here, like an industrial partner here, which would have operated in similar industries across the world. So this is also important to us to manage those type of risks at this stage. So we're looking at this project, we're scrutinizing it, we're going to continue to develop that project in order to obtain a mining license. And we're looking at the risk profile, and we're going to be looking for the proper partner in order to implement that. Just like in Sierra Gorda, this has shown us that doing a JV together can deliver incremental value for you and for us and for you as shareholders. And that's one of the reasons we're looking at this project in a similar way to what we did with Sierra Gorda. Then we have a follow-up question. I'll read it out, but I think you already responded to that question, Jason from the So, ladies and gentlemen, in the strategy, we do have multiple minerals or commodities. And this is an example of one of the avenues we can pursue. We haven't finally made the decision about wanting to do this project, yes or no. We have to look at the mining side, the geology side of things, what the final layout of the mine is, the concession, what the CapEx would entail, and then we'll make a final decision. And in the meantime, as I've mentioned previously, we're going to look for an equity partner that would support us, underpin us in this project. And a dream partner would be an industrial partner where we could do that project together. And in the meantime, we have a number of meetings, for example, in Brussels, to think about the approach to polyhalite and think about this mineral in terms of doing the reconnaissance on that subject by the European Commission. This is going to be quite an important element, and we'll take that into consideration. We'll factor that in before we make any major decision in terms of building a mine. Then we have a question from Jason from the Bank of America about 2.0. Ladies and gentlemen, as we look at our resource base, we are consistently expanding that by gaining access to new mining sites, deposits, by having new shafts put in place. And this is something that I've talked with some of you about. Even so, we do see things happening on the other side of the Oder River. So there's some boreholes. It's hard to say what that mine would look like. We are thinking about KGHM 2.0. This is a bit of a field test. So this mine is going to be highly sophisticated and advanced in terms of digitalization, automation. So in terms of this project, we want to design solutions which we will also implement in KGHM. And so this is a rather broad concept in terms of how we approach a deposit in a totally new way, somewhat autonomously, with a totally different approach in terms of transportation, thinking about hydrogen transport. And so there are many topics under this project we want to consider and factor in. And I'm more than convinced and confident that many of the solutions will be introduced within our existing infrastructure. So this project is highly interesting to us in terms of using it as a lab for experience in terms of defining the target solutions and the core business approach. So continuing that subject, KGHM 2.0, we have a question from Pavel Puchalski. What is going to be the total CapEx for KGHM 2.0? The initial CapEx will be linked to the boreholes, so we have to put the dimensions on the entire deposit. So this is the first CapEx-related topic that will appear. Everything else will utilize companies from within the group in order to prepare the layout, the solution, and this will respond to the question what type of cost we're actually talking about. It's a little premature to discuss that figure. Even so, if we look at the construction cycle, reconnaissance of a deposit, and so we're talking about things that will cost that will take place over a number in the teens to 20 years. So it's the right time to think about doing those boreholes, think about the layout, and then we will clearly sit down with you and talk about the exact CapEx and whether or not this project would have a financial viability. This is going to be the key thing for me in how and according to what rules we should do this project in the shorter period of time. It's more important for us to do some tests and design some technological solutions which we could utilize in our existing asset and then implement some solutions here. Then we have a question from Jakub Szkopek. At what depth do you have the deposit in KGHM 2.0? So we have historical boreholes, and we don't have too many here. We have to remember that our deposit is at an angle downwards, so we're talking about a depth of 1,400 meters and lower below ground. We have to talk about the minerals. What is the layout of that deposit? Then can we respond more specifically? We have to think about the technology because, having in mind the target conditions, it has to be highly automated to a larger extent in terms of our mining operations. So it will be different from what we're doing right now in the mines we have already in our portfolio. Now I have a question from Paweł Puchalski. What is the CapEx for Victoria starting from 2026? So the question is about the total CapEx, including the second production shaft. So the CapEx we anticipate for the first up until the first ton of winnings from the Victoria project is roughly $1.5 billion. So that's the total CapEx of that project. This is dependent on a number of elements, but we're talking about that order of magnitude with respect to the CapEx, capital expenditures. So let me add, we're doing an important element in the Victoria. We're talking about 1,340 meters. We're actually drilling boreholes, and they have shown us that the deposit is much bigger than we had anticipated during the modeling. But the content, this is something we'll want to come back to you with because this will define the overall project. But the initial elements, in terms of doing the boreholes, have shown positive impact or a positive result vis-a-vis what we've seen in the initial modeling. So we have to compile all of the information doing the boreholes at various depths, and then we can talk about the size of that deposit. But I can say that right now, this deposit has proven to be much more beneficial to us than we had originally asserted or posited. We have another question.
Ioannis Masvoulas, are you looking to add copper concentrate supply that will be physically shipped to your Polish smelters, or could you just sell the material to the market like you do with Sierra Gorda and Robinson?
Thank you very much for this interesting question. So if we look at things on a net basis, looking at our production assets, we export the concentrate. Some of you have seen on the fast market the most recent transaction, which was done by Sierra Gorda. We have beaten another record with more than 202 for contraction for the upcoming year. In terms of domestic assets, I would say, as you can see in Q1, we have a much bigger added value to produce cathodes and put it through the rods and sell that as a product. Logistically speaking, even if in theory we were to say that we would turn on the smelters and sell all the concentrate externally, having in mind the magnitude of our infrastructure, of our production, well, our infrastructure is not prepared. The ports aren't ready to support that level of volumes. So we are buying concentrate. We're also purchasing scrap. What I can tell you, which is changing a lot in the modeling of our production, this is dictated by, of course, the financial aspects. So we're doing a lot of calculations to make sure that the cookbook, as we call it, so the perfect blend that we'd like to achieve from a technical point of view, but also from a financial effectiveness point of view. And we can see, based on our recent results, that this is something that's proven itself very well. We would like to drill down to a greater detail, and so we've made a strategic decision to change the ERP system from the current SAP system to the SAP Fremer system. And so we're in the course of dialogue in order to kick off the implementation work, which will incorporate production assets. We want to have all of the technical and technological production processes involved and to make sure that they're incorporated within our new SAP solution. Now, we have a question from Jason.
Thoughts on changes to Polish tax regime? Another industry play in Poland is suggesting that mining taxes could come.
Thank you very much for that question, Jason. What I think when we talk about our neighbor, we're working, we have dialogue in terms of the taxes. It's good to have another partner in the Ministry of Finance in terms of the standard for taxation across the globe. I myself, a few weeks ago, visited the Ministry of Finance to talk about modification to the formula. But we should say, objectively speaking, this is not only in Poland the situation, but the financial deficit in other countries means the room, there is room for discussion in. There's not much room to discuss lowering taxes here, but I do see a light in the tunnel. So we were talking with the finance ministry 2 years ago in terms of altering the formula for taxation. Many people said we would not be successful. We were able to utilize arguments to convince them to change that formula. But once again, we would like to continue the discussion. We'd like to redefine that, let's say, calculation and to have to make sure that the level of that taxation would be in correspondence to other tax jurisdictions. Now we have a question from Arsene. Why don't you have specific measurable objectives for reducing CapEx in the group? Do you have cash costs objectives for the period up until 2030? So, ladies and gentlemen, as part of the strategy, we want to operationalize certain activities. This is a plan that is integrated with the second area of activities. We were talking about it after the announcement of the strategy in terms of optimizing our costs. And of course, we will want to share or show you more of that, but every quarter we're showing you our internal KPIs, where values have been assigned to them in terms of the directors responsible for individual areas. And from that point of view, you can see year on year costs by nature have grown by less than 2% year on year. And the normalized cost base is something we're working on. This is a process. Of course, we can share that data with you to some extent. These are initiatives that we've undertaken. We've addressed them internally. And this is something we're working on a day-to-day basis. Things are happening, and you see the materialization when you see the quarterly results. Then we have another question from Yanis.
As Legnica is gradually being repurposed towards scrap processing, what will be the copper concentrate needs of your smelter network over the next decade?
Once again, our goal. And this is what we're aspiring to do. We want to utilize our infrastructure fully efficiently in terms of the financial basis. So, scrap and lignite, this is very important, and this is something that will continue to progress. By the end of the year, we're going to be able to show our specific plan for lignite in terms of altering the profile of its operations and some additional profile. This is something that was discussed. That's additional metals or other things that we're going to be able to recover in our production process. But never, even so, we have to say that the capacity in global is sufficiently large that we do see the ability to increase the leverage, the operational leverage through Głogów, and then adjust to Legnica in terms of the headcount and the CapEx to ensure that it would be an effective asset, primarily in terms of operating on the basis of scrap and concentrate. Even so, we're looking at external concentrates. You see that we're purchasing that from various producers of concentrates where this is aligned to our smelter plants and so RTCC. And this is something that's quite important to us to make sure that every supplier would be suitable for us chemically, but also in terms of the price negotiations, in terms of utilizing that RTCC. So, could you give more details about the investment in the Sardinia wire rod plant? Mr. Remigiusz Paszkowicz talked about that. So, ladies and gentlemen, so we're at a very advanced stage in terms of the Sardinia wire rod plant, in terms of building a new plant. So, we're going to have the ability to produce more than 100,000 tons, and so this would increase the amount of rods production where we would use utilities at a much more efficiently, so we would need less and fewer people. So this is one of the elements of our strategy for us to augment added value through products that we produce. We want to produce them as efficiently as possible. So this new investment is well aligned to our strategy, new strategy. And another thing we're considering is doing in parallel to have the utilize the old production line along with the new production facility. And so we're in the course of dialogue with you, and we're thinking about should we utilize a different location in Europe, or should we move it, relocate it elsewhere outside of Europe, having in mind our asset resource base that we have and partnership, local partnership with an investor. That's something we're also considering. So we have another question from Jason.
Your engineering company, DMC, how do you think, how you think about managing it and making sure that it's properly accountable? Where would we see the results of the business in terms of the work you do for the third parties?
So, ladies and gentlemen, the EBITDA margin in an engineering company is not at the same magnitude that we would see in the mining company, but this is a skill or a competence we're interested. We're not thinking about DMC like in the Victoria project, where many tasks are being done there, and they're the main contractor. What I can say at present is on the revenue side, 30% of the revenue is the purchase of services. Services we're doing from TMC, and the rest is delivered externally. And that's how we're able to gain knowledge about other projects. And when we're talking about larger investments, like M&A investments, so on top of the fact that we're able to price certain things, but we're also to deliver knowledge and a set of people, a full set of people who are capable of building the overall infrastructure above the ground, under the ground, in terms of smelting, metallurgy. And so we're able to deliver that knowledge to the table, and we value this company in a totally different way. As a result, we've taken several different approaches with respect to external companies. Well, some wanted to buy DMC from us, but it's not for sale. We see greater added value, having in mind the cash flow it generates. But I can say that DMC is self-financing, and from that point of view, it doesn't attract any capital from our side. And that's also an element in terms of the cash flow that supports, but maybe it's not, or underpins us. It's not maybe a major one, but it's more important to talk about the knowledge and experience we're able to build in a variety of projects across many continents. So DMC has 2.5, more than 2,500 employees in both of the Americas. And so delivering services for a large number of our partners, they're delivering services to those. And so we're very pleased with the accomplishments that have expanded to quite dynamically here. We have another question. Does the company plan for major flows from foreign assets, especially Sierra Norda, in order to underpin domestic asset projects, or the assets with the cash flows stay abroad, like to build the Victoria plant? Well, the opening balance is such that we have $2.5 billion of loans not served in Sierra Gorda, and so that's still a major amount. But the cash flow that you've observed after Q1, well, the flows in subsequent quarters will basically appear, and so that debt is being serviced very quickly, and so those payments are servicing that debt. But in terms of capital allocation, that's a more broader topic and a strategy, as the CEO has mentioned during the earlier presentation. So we haven't made the decision based on our ability to spend using our own funds or having external financing. We're thinking about the viability of a given investment, and so we're thinking about the projects and competition between them for capital. So basically, this is a rare resource that we have, and so you're informed by a higher rate of return. So if Victoria will be such a project, then it will be supported. But we're also talking with the ACI and with our global people in terms of building collateral for financing the Victoria project, so it will have its own financing as a project, and this will be secured to complete the preparation of the second shaft and open up the mine. And so that's something that will also transpire in the future. We have a question about our market outlook. How do we see the market for commodities on a strategic basis, mid and long term, having in mind the geopolitical situation, the macroeconomics, the market? Can they affect or somehow disturb the realization execution of the new strategy of KGHM? As I said at the outset, at present, it's, well, the difficulty associated with building a strategy today is based on, and this has been emphasized, that the strategy can be basically DM become out of no longer is current after a couple quarters because of what can happen. That's why we want to have multiple scenarios, build our resilience in terms of how we see, perceive the future. What has proven itself is diversification, starting with our clients, our customers, continents, diversification, dispersion of our assets that we're able to deliver our products to copper wire rods, and we want to produce other products that are even more higher, have a higher level of processing than just the copper wire rods that will augment the margins. We also want to diversify and manage the risks we have. This is our sort of recipe of how to operate in terms of our view. In a few words, I think there's nothing like global demand and supply for copper. We're certainly closed in by certain regions. This is not a process caused by ephemeral elements, and that might end. along with the upcoming presidential elections in the US. I think this is something that we're going to have to live with for the upcoming cycle. I'm not sure how long the next upcoming cycle will last. So we're talking about several years to a number of years, up to 20. So the diversification should deliver measurable impact and effects. So we want to be present in North America, in South America, in Europe, and that's why we take a positive viewpoint in terms of Morocco. So I can say, not only with respect to copper concentrates, that's something that fits with our smelters, but also in terms of geology and the political stability, we feel comfortable there. And the partners we're talking with locally also give us, instill a feeling of long-term cooperation. And from this point of view, this is a destination where we see a future, and we want to be present there. We have negotiations and talks in the near period in terms of mining, licensing, and mining, and there. And so we have some due diligence exercise up front and geological documentation surveys. And so we have a positive view on that subject in that region. So diversification, building the organizational resilience, these are things that we will continue to do from day to day. At the end of the day, as I said, not only to avoid those gaps and threats that or hazards that appear, but at the end of the day, to generate a better result than our competition. And as the CEO said, perhaps we're not the largest player on the market, but we want to be very agile, build those unique competences and skills that are needed in a mining and smelting metallurgical context. So I see that, Jason, you've sent me an email. When will the first production of Victoria take place? 35. Well, we're engaged in dialogue with the Government of Canada. Our project is one of the strategic projects there, and there's a special fund to which we will apply. It's going to be a donation of sorts, which should accelerate production and accelerate our commitment. So I think we're going to be able to truncate that period measurably, but we need a few more moments to complete our discussions in Canada. This 1215 CapEx, that's what we still have to spend, Jason. And so that's more or less what this project looks like, entails. So as soon as we complete the boreholes, which will define the size of the deposit, we'll hold a dedicated meeting, or we'll deliver some information about that project, because this will give us the ability to talk about this project, to portray this project on the market prior to bankability, in terms of the parameters that we have, having in mind the data we will gain through the boreholes and the extrapolations we'll make about the Victoria project. So we have another question. Does the company plan investments in AI? If so, in what area? And where would they affect the business model? So, ladies and gentlemen, I won't talk about AI in terms of agents that we're training. I think everybody is doing that to some extent. So the effects generated by that do exist, but this is a small scale. We're thinking about production and operational aspects. We're thinking about our domestic flotation procedure. So, in order to harness a solution that would be tested in AI in terms of how to add certain chemicals, the sequencing of mining and the metallurgical plan. So both here and abroad, we're involved in negotiations about how to approach this topic. And so if we agree with our implementation partner, then we can share with you details about how you want to approach that. There's quite a bit of potential in terms of the production volumes we have in Poland, but also in Robinson, which should generate some measurable impacts. We're talking about utilizing AI there as well. Naturally, we've done some modeling in the power sector, energy, so weather models we're utilizing to model prices, which we're putting into our plans and divisions, and some of them are forecasting energy prices. This is something we've done. It's generating some impact. So we want to do this in ordered basis and manage the ultimate energy room, which would manage all of our production assets from a single room, from a single venue. And this is something that we're considering for implementation, such that we could manage the overall energy infrastructure from a single venue automatically, and then somehow bypassing the human touch or the human participation. We have a question. In the strategy, you have the average prices for copper up until 2035, about 15% down from current level and 5% lower from the silver prices. Are these too conservative? Well, let me remind you. So copper is 11,454, silver is 5,818. So this is based on the median in a realistic base, in real terms. As a result, our forecasts are below the market median. So we use back testing and testing to check our business model, and that's how we prefer to approach this, as opposed to inputting in our model an overly high price path. So we see the cash flow and how the situation of the company, what the cash flow would entail under other price scenarios. So we do have, in fact, these elements incorporated. So I think there's quite a bit of probability that will generate a positive surprise. But as a rule, we have a very conservative approach in this area. Ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to thank you for your attendance to the chat in the chat function. If new questions appear where we haven't responded to those questions, we'll field those questions and we'll share the responses to those questions in the near future. So thank you very much. We'll see you soon. Goodbye then. Thank you very much.